Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Neil Garfield Show, a presentation sponsored by www.livinglies.wordpress.com, GTC Honored, and The Garfield Firm, serving all 50 states with news and analysis of the latest bank scams against borrowers, homeowners, consumers, and investors, and providing legal representation throughout Florida. This program is for general information only. It is not a solicitation for services or legal representation and should never be used as a substitute for advice from a licensed professional. And now, here's world-renowned financial expert, attorney, and blogger, Neil Garfield.
Hello, everyone in Radio Land. Today is October 4th, 2018. And once again here with my good friend and analyzer, Bill Padillo, private investigator. And he has really pulled up something that I think California litigators are going to be able to use and use effectively for challenging MERS agency and so many of our California cases that we are involved in. It involves a code of the California Revenue and Tax Code, RTC for short, and that's section 23302, and some of you will have had an opportunity to see Neil's blog post regarding this. Now, as always, this show is brought to you, and it is brought to you live here, San Diego, California. And again, I am Charles Marshall. I am broadcasting out of San Diego, California. And this West Coast foreclosure show is broadcast on rotating Thursdays, typically. Neil Garfield usually will be broadcasting himself on alternate Thursdays. And we anticipate that to carry into next week. And if it does not carry into next week, then we will have an update on that. But that's what's anticipated at this time. Now, this show, as always, is brought to you by GTC Honors, Living Lies, and LendingLies.com. And it is made possible because of donations from listeners like you. Thank you, and Neil thanks you. Any amount that you're able to donate is appreciated, and you can donate directly on the blog by selecting the Donate button. And again, that blog website is www.livinglies.wordpress.com. And welcome again, Bill. Always great to have you on.
Good to be here as always, Charles. This is kind of a fun topic today. Thank you.
Yes, very interested to get your intel and your take on this section. So go ahead and tell the listeners about it.
Certainly. Well, first I want to give some major kudos here, and I pointed out that paralegal Kimberly Cromwell, who I work with on a lot of different cases, and some of the sites that I posted in the article is due to her real excellent research and legal analysis. She's worked incredibly hard, especially in this particular case where I'm using these references that were actively involved in, and so she deserves a tremendous amount of credit. So I also want to let the listeners know that some of the details of that specific case I'm not really mentioning at this point, simply because we're at a certain a place in the litigation where we're just holding back on any type of real publicity or whatnot, or to discuss some of these issues until we reach a couple of milestones or hurdles. So But that being said, this revenue tax code that we're referencing here today, I think really has some serious legs. And that's because of what we're seeing in this litigation and what we're seeing MERS come back with in their handling of the case and their positions. I think it's very clear and telling that they're kind of a deer in the headlights. They don't know what to do with this. They're continuously asking for extensions and whatnot because I think they're really hamstrung by this revenue tax code. And I really believe that for those out there who have had an assignment that fits this fact pattern in this article, on behalf of MERS for a nominee that's in suspension status with the Franchise Tax Board in California, I think this is a real useful tool to get certainly into discovery, because what the basis of my article is and what these arguments entail is questioning MERS's agency authority, not just with, you know, Mortgage Electronic Registration Systems, Inc. That is simply an IT platform, as you stated. It's simply a database. They really need and have to show a agency contract and agreement with every party that are behind the curtains that we're not privy to as these unknown assigns, and those contracts have to be shown with MERS Corp. Okay, so this problem that they face is very, there's many layers to it. But when you talk about securitization, and when the typical assignments are saying MERS as nominee on behalf of these entities, whether the entity's dead, defunct, deceased, or in suspension status, they're attempting to transfer these loans into a securitized trust or an issuing entity trust that was alleged to have been set up, you know, in the 2000s, you know, 405, 06, 07, somewhere back in time. The problem that they're facing is that MERS is required by their own policy to deactivate themselves within the MERS system when they transfer a loan to non-MERS, to a non-MERS member or to non-MERS status. And from the thousands of cases that I've reviewed and investigated over the years, the vast majority of the conduit entities and the issuing entity trusts were never MERS members, never had membership agreements with MERS Corp. So effectively what that means is if, hypothetically, the loans were transferred or sold to a trust as they state in their pooling and servicing agreements and as they state to the SEC and everything else, then MERS would have exited their presence in the chain of title and relinquished any agency by deactivation long ago, years and years ago. But what MERS is trying to do and has gotten away with for so long is that they're coming in with these assignments or whatever saying, number one, you can't challenge it, and number two, they just want the courts and everyone to buy into their argument that they remain an interested party simply by having their name on the deed of trust or mortgage, that they remain an interested party till the end of time, essentially. And that's just simply false. And they've been using this as they've been using MERS simply as a shield to hide undisclosed and unknown assigns. And that's really critical when it comes to a claim for quiet title. Because in California, under the quiet title statutes, when notice is published per the statute, requirements to all unknowns, MERS's concealment of those transactions and those unknowns are arguably bound by a quiet title action. And that's what I think MERS is obviously very concerned about here, because, look, if you've got people out there who start asking questions and start poking around and find out, look, I'm not even in default. I haven't missed any payments, but hey, my loan says that the lender, ABC Mortgage, who used MERS as its nominee, has been long gone, defunct, or is in FTB suspension status. If I were to challenge that party's ability on my title or their place on title through a formal complaint of some sort, that entity and its agents are arguably they can't defend themselves if they're in a franchise tax suspension status, which means no lawyer, and you can speak to this, I'm sure, Charles, no lawyer can come in. They'll be in a world of trouble if they were to attempt to come in representing any corporation that's currently in suspension status. That's subject to serious sanctions, penalties, or disbarment. So,
right.
Am I correct?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And there's a common sense operation of kind of facts and law in the background of all this, and it simply relates to typical taxing authority used by virtually all tax authorities, particularly state authorities and the IRS as well. Basically, what they're doing here is a reservation of powers. They're saying, look, if we put you under suspension because of franchise tax board issues, and of course, that could be anything related to the broad array of potential tax regulations that these entities have to comply with in California. They have to pay various kinds of taxes for various purposes. And if that entity as a legal entity is under suspension, naturally, they're not able to alienate real property. And again, the reason for that is simple control of their of the prerogatives of the state franchise tax board in California. They're basically saying, look, as an individual or entity, if you're out of compliance with your tax payments in some way and you are out of compliance in such a way that we've suspended your right to operate as a business, then we're not going to let you sell anything because to do so would obviously jeopardize the tax money that the franchise tax board is still intending to collect. So yeah, that's how that would play out.
Well, these entities, and it's my understanding that, and then through the research and the legal analysis, is that if they're in suspension status, they cannot legally dissolve themselves with the state until that tax liability is resolved. And with many of these companies, the amount of business and loans that they were originating and the amount of business that they were conducting during that time period, to get current on those taxes, to revive those corporations, is just not a cost-effective solution. You're talking potentially millions of dollars just to get them current so that they could represent themselves in some kind of legal action. That simply is probably not going to happen, and I think that is why we see hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these entities just, they sit dormant in FTP status with the state of California, and they never formally dissolve. They never formally wrap up their obligations to do such. They just basically sit there in that fashion. And so this issue, you know, it's kind of surprising after all these years and everything else that this issue is now becoming, you know, to the forefront as it's been discovered, and we're starting to push it. And I think it's kind of a funny story here. I mean, the California Franchise Tax Board, they're starting to get used to my name because I'm calling them on a regular basis now, and I'm inquiring as to the exact date that these entities went into suspension status. I mean, a lot of times if you look them up, you're going to see with the Secretary of State or with the Franchise Tax Board, you'll see that they're in suspension status. And you can kind of guess around the time period they went suspended, but they're not stating the exact date that they went in there. So when I've been calling, they've been very, very cordial and polite, and they've been giving me the dates, so on and so forth, of these entities when I've been inquiring. But yesterday, I think they're trying to avoid having to answer this question to me and others now, I think, at this point, if the cat's out of the bag, because the gal who answered yesterday simply said we have a policy change that we no longer will give that information out to callers or anyone who's not a principal of that entity, and she hung up on me. So if that's the case, then it appears that in order to obtain that information, it may end up having to come by way of subpoena or formal discovery or something of that nature, you know, in a litigation phase. So maybe it's got somebody flustered, or maybe some calls have gone out, or maybe, you know, maybe they're extremely concerned about this becoming to the forefront in litigation and challenging MERS. But I definitely think we've got some legs with this one, Charles, based on their response so far in this case that we're involved in. It's very, very telling, their mannerisms and what their arguments have been thus far and their delay. So we'll see. I mean, I think this is, again, a very important issue to get into discovery, to force them to lay out their authorities by agency and another way to challenge these assignments. This is a place that they can't go and they won't go, because the emperor has no clothes behind the curtains. You're going to find out that there's never been an agency that they can allege throughout the entire history of the loan.
Right, and I think even apart from discovery, there's a good avenue of pursuit here at the very initial phase of filing a complaint. There are a number of causes of action that one is going to be able to use to address this type of thing.
Yeah, now I've mentioned that there's a part two to this that I'm going to write another article about, and maybe we can talk about it in a couple weeks when we're back on the show. And it kind of ties in and relates to all of this. And I can kind of touch upon that a little bit as sort of a tee up for that. But many of these document fabrication mills, and I'll use Nationwide Title Clearing as the example here, and I use that company in this particular article here who executes this assignment on behalf of the FTB suspended Central Pacific Mortgage. And it looks kind of suspicious as they try to backdate the effective date on the assignment to predate the suspension status. So you can take that for what it's worth. I mean, that's kind of my observation there. But anyhow, these entities like Nationwide Title Clearing, I'm certain that they're not, I'm highly certain that they're not checking for these types of issues and these types of laws when they're executing these documents and these assignments on a mass scale. And again, because they just, all they do is check, according to their own website, their process is to simply check the county records and the title, and that's all they do as a third-party vendor. They don't have any knowledge of the underlying transactions or none of those things. But anyway, in looking at some of the consent decrees that were signed by Nationwide Title Clearing when they were being investigated by some of the attorney generals around the country between 2010 and 2015, I was looking at their signed consent decree out of Illinois and Florida. And, you know, not only are all the behaviors that they were accused of doing, not only are they continuing to this day, nothing has changed in what they agreed not to do, but the signing by officers, signing as officers of corporations without identifying who they're working for and that they work for Nationwide, and they don't have just all of the typical robo signing forgery stuff. That all is continuing. But what's interesting is that the attorney generals in those consent decrees, specifically Nationwide Title Clearing, agreed that, or let me back up 1 second. One of the allegations being made by the attorney generals was that MERS's assignments of the note or the debt instruments in their assignments was considered an unfair and deceptive trade practice. okay? And so Nationwide Dial had to agree that they weren't going to assign the notes or the debt instruments for on behalf of MERS or as, you know, a nominee for these entities in these assignments. Well, now when you look at the case law, it seems to fly right in the face of all of these, you know, long settled legal opinions that a transfer of the security instrument without the debt is a nullity. It has no effect. And yet they're saying, go ahead and continue to do business. Go ahead and continue to execute these things, but you can't transfer the debt. You can't transfer the note. Well, then what are they really transferring? Okay, I mean, if they don't have any knowledge of the actual transaction and the parties are misrepresenting who they are, I mean, and they're not allowed to transfer the debt, then why are these assignments getting any presumptions as to the validity of the underlying transaction or the transfer of the debt when they are when they agree that they can't do that? I don't know. What's your take on that one, Charles?
Well, I think one risk here, and it's frankly a risk even for, you know, outright suspension under RTC 23302. What could happen is that a lot of courts will look at this and they'll treat it like they do other types of suspensions that various entities are under related to various regulators in California or regulations in California. In other words, there could be an issue with the California Secretary of State where they're no longer registered. They're not current on their dues. They have some other kind of suspension status. And you will need to recall that in California, and this is not uncommon elsewhere as well, in California, both federal and state courts now routinely will say that that type of suspension makes the underlying assignments associated with that suspension, it makes them merely voidable, not void. I think there is a danger that this type of suspension could go that way. The counter argument to that happening, though, is we're talking about fundamental rights to transfer property here. We're not talking about kind of administrative defects that could be fixed by paying an interim fee or re-registering in some fashion to comply with some statute. We're talking about fundamental tax problems. I mean, as you pointed out, it's not as if this is an individual who's $3,000 behind in their taxes and it takes a couple checks in the mail to get their suspension status essentially eliminated. On the contrary, we're talking, I'm sure, in many cases, multiple six figures of tax liability or at least alleged tax liability, whether or not it's gone to some kind of a definitive court proceeding, and in some cases you'll be talking about millions of dollars at issue. So when you take account of all that, I think what that means in the real world is that a lot of entities under this type of suspension will remain so, and for that reason it's absolutely an area that we need to try to get into litigation in California. I mean, it's a brilliant idea to use the TC.
You know, I'm not advocating, Charles. And excuse me for interrupting. I'm not advocating filing frivolous lawsuits, and I'm sure you would certainly not advocate that as well.
No, I'm saying but I think
the game changer here, in a sense, is that look, a corporation cannot represent itself without legal counsel. They have to have an attorney represent them, and if they're in FDB status, that attorney and that corporation cannot defend itself. They cannot come forth and defend themselves. Now, does that mean, you know, you file suits against all these entities because they're defenseless? Well, it's possible. It's possible. But part of the underlying issue on the case that these sites are coming from that we're talking about here is that this was a quiet title judgment entered in our favor, the client's favor, right? The client, in good faith, has attempted for a long period of time to find out who is the holder in due course of my note, who owns my debt. He has gone to the servicer repeatedly and repeatedly saying, hey, I've got a quiet title judgment, but who do I owe this money to? Prove it. They can't do it, see? They can't come back. In over a year's time, they just basically have been dodging the questions. They've been non-responsive. They've produced nothing to show who's entitled to the debt. And therefore, the point is that, you know, people need to start asking questions about the title to their property in these entities. And if there is an issue such as this, and you can't get a straight answer from your servicer, such as who do I owe this money to? Who's entitled to the payment that I send in every month? And am I going to get a clear reconveyance and satisfaction by the right party when this is done? These are basic fundamental protections and questions that need to be answered. When they can't do that, and you've got an entity that is in suspension status on your deed of trust, and there's been no assignments there, and MERS is sitting there, look, I think you've, you know, to protect yourself, you may want to seriously take a look at filing an action against those parties, because not only, one, can they not defend themselves, but it's going to help get to the truth. But first of all, again...
Right, and just to clarify what you're kind of discussing here, because again, this is not a show of legal advice. This is a show where we discuss legal topics, and anything that any listener takes away from this show, they need to vet with a specific attorney who takes their own analysis into what we talk about. So that's something that has to happen independently. As far as the situation here, it certainly needs to be said that any type of foreclosure lawsuit, particularly a plaintiff's one, which we often see in California, we talk about a lot on this show, the bona fides have to be there to the causes of action. The underlying illegalities and irregularities that rise to violations of law need to be in the predicate fact analysis, and the intersection of that fact analysis with the relative and the relevant legal framework. And neither Bill or myself, we're certainly not advocating just bringing legal actions against entities who are in franchise tax board suspension status. We are pointing out that where you have a defendant who has a certain issue, then you can, when the law otherwise supports, use this RTC section as a way of advancing your case and as a way of supporting your case. And that all, of course, is perfectly legitimate. One thing I also did want to add, when we're talking about loans as securitized, to quote Neil, to say that is basically a statement that the loan was either purchased by the trust or a third party who was the trustor forming the trust, who then transferred the loan to the trustee to be administered in accordance with the terms of the trust instrument. Of course, Neil's position, and it's also my own, is these things don't even happen. And that is all of our time for today's show. So thank you again, Bill, for being here, and either Neil or myself will be back next week.
Thanks, Charles. Good to be here.
Thanks for listening to our broadcast. We hope that you tell your friends about us and let them know that there is hope and help in this financial crisis. Tune in every week to the Neil Garfield Show for free information and advice, and visit our blog daily at The Living Lies Blog. We provide support services, the latest strategies, analysis, expert consultations, testimony, and declarations to use in your battle against the largest economic crime in human history. For information concerning Neil, the team at Living Lies, or the law firm, go to www.livinglies.wordpress.com or call 520-480-8255. 405-1688. The opinions expressed on this broadcast are those of the host and should not be attributed to any other person or entity.